Good afternoon, America. Welcome to the Raucous Caucus. This is Mark Levine, and hopefully I've got Terry DeKester on the line there. Terry, are you there? Let's bring in Terry.
Good morning.
Good morning.
How are you, sir?
I'm good. It's actually afternoon here on the East Coast.
Oh, well, you know, I mean, you guys have got the wrong time.
Well, we started it. I mean, I don't know when Oregon started its crazy time system. But, hey, listen, I got to tell you something. It is beautiful in D.C. The weather is just perfect. It's like this 68 degrees. You walk outside. The cherry blossoms are in bloom. They're gorgeous. And Washington's in its complete dysfunction as usual. But it's very pretty. It's a beautiful dysfunction, a kind of like, I don't know, a supermodel.
It's not quite as pretty as Oregon, though, I have to tell you that. In fact, Oregon, you take the Shenandoah Valley, for instance, as one of the most beautiful places
in
Virginia, and you magnify it times 10, and you have Oregon.
You don't have cherry blossoms. We win.
I have cherry blossoms all over my office.
I think that Washington is a beautiful dysfunction. Again, I like a supermodel. It's beautiful. Particularly now, April, it's wonderful to look at. And underneath, apparently, there are various insects climbing up through the earth.
Yeah. Yeah, you use the analogy of a supermodel, and I have actually worked with some supermodels like Victoria's Secret, and believe me, they are strange human beings.
So they are beautiful and dysfunctional. Okay, that was just guessing. I assume so, but I can't say I've ever worked with any supermodel. So in terms of dysfunction, and by the way, for those of you who are missing Garland Nixon, he will join us halfway through the broadcast.
Well, that's only appropriate since he's only got half of a mind.
Well, I was just going to say he's only half as good as us, so he only
right.
gets half the show.
But
he's going to join in, and of course we'll continue to insult him until he does. Welcome to the Raucous Caucus. If you haven't heard us before, we are, of course, on every Sunday on React Radio AM 1480 at 12 noon. Usually it's the three of us. Garland's just late today. But I do want to talk about Washington dysfunction, and actually I think it fits in with your topic as well, Terry.
Oh, yeah.
Because it is tax day tomorrow. Our taxes are due. Have you done your taxes? Do you pay taxes,
no.
Terry?
Damn it. Yeah, I did them, but I mailed them to Columbia because I figured they had a better tax system.
Uh-huh.
You know, so I guess I've got to...
I don't think that's acceptable even in Oregon.
Oh, rats.
Sorry. But I want to talk about taxes and who pays them and who doesn't. But also, before we get there, sort of a way to fight Washington dysfunction. Specifically,
No.
There is a way. There is a way. So as you may know, the bill, and it's by far imperfect, and we're going to talk about all its imperfections, and it isn't done yet. But basically, the Republicans were just going to kill any bill to require background checks for guns. They were just going to kill it, even though 90% of Americans support background checks, including some 85% of gun owners agree with background checks. So I guess the people that don't agree are those that are violent felons or the mentally ill, which
describes the NRA.
There you go. There you go.
Exactly.
But apparently it was going to be dead. They were going to do a filibuster. I like to begin with an optimistic story. I'm in a good mood. The cherry blossoms are out. And I got to tell you something. A couple parents from Newtown, Connecticut, they went door to door, senator to senator, and showed, I think, us a good lesson at We Act Radio, how we can act. It's really interesting. So they basically had declared the bill dead. And then these families, they started on 60 Minutes. It was Nicole Hockey, who lost her six-year-old son, Dylan. And they had meetings with 26 senators over 3 days.
Wow.
And let me just read to you some of what they did. I'm reading here, this is from the Washington Post. It says that they literally brought the legislation back to life that had been declared dead on the Hill. And what they did is they didn't follow the usual script. It's interesting what the senators said. This is all, of course, off the record. We don't know which senator said it. But the senators said that normally what people do is they pound on the table and they demand action and stuff like that. That's not what Nicole Hockey and the other parents did. Instead, they talked about their kids. Sandy, Ricky Seidman, and the others said that they didn't bang on the tables. Nicole Hockey keeps her son's ashes in an urn on her bedroom dresser. Quote, "Every night I beg for him to come to me in my dreams so that I can see him again. Mm-hmm. And during the day, I just focus on what I need to do to honor him and to make change." Another story, this is that of, her son had special needs, and he was autistic, and he had a very close relationship with his special ed teacher. And when the bullets started flying, the teacher brought Dylan into her arms, and that's how the two of them were found.
Oh, my God.
Locked in each other's arms. They talk about just how their kids were. One kid had perfect pitch and was just learning how to play the piano. Another child was a big Ultimate Frisbee fan. They basically just talked about their kids. And for whatever they did, they broke through this, you know, the all-powerful NRA. And it's not done. I want to talk about still problems. We've got to deal with it. But it's amazing. It's nice to have some good news. It's amazing that individual Americans can tell their heart-wrenching stories and actually break some ice still here on Capitol Hill. It's nice to know that's still possible. Sometimes you get so cynical you think it's never possible.
There's a lesson in that, Mark, and it's an important lesson if you think about it. I mean, with all of the horror and tragedy that occurred during the Civil Rights Movement, and there was plenty of it, at the same time, what really empowered the Civil Rights Movement was the individual story, and also was people like, you know, Martin Luther King, who, you know, an incredibly articulate, eloquent man and strong man, but his approach was a compassion approach. It was not a pounding on the table, do it my way, you know, or else. And there's something to be learned about that. And one question I have, and I don't want to get you off topic here, but because I still haven't figured out why there aren't more of the progressive organizations lobbying for this. I mean, even things like the American Friends Society, maybe even, I don't know, all of these organizations that exist for trying to, you know, progressively improve our society, and I haven't seen them doing anything.
I'll tell you, a lot of these organizations, they care about, I'm sorry to say this, but it's certainly not only true on the left, but they care about raising money and promoting their organizations, and they send professional lobbyists. When really you just need to send people. Let me read a few more of these stories. This is Francine Wheeler was talking about her six-year-old son, Ben. He sang with perfect pitch, was learning to play the piano, and wanted to be an architect or a paleontologist. That's what his big brother was. This is a six-year-old. And then her voice cracking and eyes welling with tears, she pleaded with Americans to call their senators and urge them to pass the gun control legislation. And this apparently got us past at least the very first filibuster. So now the bill is going to the floor, but the next step is the amendments. You see, that's one dragon passed, but there's several others guarding the cage or whatever, the gold. I don't know how to – my metaphor is all messed
pit,
up this morning.
The NRA pit.
The NRA pit of hell.
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe it's the bridges, the cross the river Styx, whatever it is. We will mix our metaphors tonight. We have a right as Americans to mix and mess up our metaphors. It's a free country. If I want to mess up my metaphor.
Darn right.
Exactly. But in any case, the next step is all these amendments. And so there was an agreement made between Pat Toomey, Republican of Pennsylvania, and Joe Manchin, a very strong – they both have, by the way, an A rating from the NRA. Joe Manchin is the Democrat from West Virginia who famously showed in his election him shooting through a bill, literally taking a gun out and shooting through a bill to show that he could be tough on guns and everything. But they made a deal on private sales. The idea was, and listen, this is better than nothing, that we're going to stop gun shows, we're going to stop gun sales over the internet. Frankly, I think it's amazing still that you can buy guns over the internet. Yeah, I'll take three AK-47s and I'll have a tank and some anthrax and, give me some nukes too. I'll just put that on the Amazon. I understand there's free shipping for every three nukes. You get a free atomic bomb. You know, it's that easy. And, of course, it wasn't the Newtown shooter. But who was the shooter? No, it was the Colorado crazy man. And I try not to give their names if I can help it because I don't want to glorify them. But the guy in Colorado who thought he was in a Batman movie who had bought so much stuff on the internet that his apartment was full just of explosives. And so what Manchin and Toomey would do is ban sales on the internet, ban sales at gun shows, which actually goes pretty far for these two straight-A NRA members. They wouldn't ban private sales where the people know each other.
Actually, ban sales, and that's never going to get through. Is it banning sales at gun shows?
Yeah, no. No, excuse me. When I say banning sales, I mean sales without a background check. No.
Good.
I want to be very clear. No.
Well, you had my hopes way
no,
up.
No. This is huge for them. But yeah. No. In other words, when I say ban, I mean requiring a background check. Ban sales without a background check.
Okay.
You could still sell to people you know without a background check.
And you can still go to the gun show and buy 532, AR-17s or whatever the heck.
But you
are.
must have a background check, and you can't resell them to people you don't know, which would be a big deal. You can't go on a Craigslist and say, I've got 532 AK-47s. Uh-huh. I'm going to sell them to you. So this is a big deal. I just still don't know if it's going to pass. They've given up on the high-capacity magazine stuff, which is too bad. But, hey, one step at a time, an inch for an inch. But now the gun lobby is trying to attach a killer amendment.
Of course.
How appropriate they call it a killer amendment, since it would lead to more killings. What they want to do is they want to say that if you can lawfully own your gun in one state, you can violate the laws of the other 49 states. They want to basically take away state sovereignty.
That can't be. The whole right
they love states'
thing.
Rights. They love
yeah,
the,
about
the right
state rights. This
no,
can't
no.
be.
They love the right of red states to overrun blue states.
Oh, okay.
See, the idea is something like this: if Montana or Wyoming, states where they have a very strong gun culture, allows you to have an AK-47, you can then travel to Rhode Island or Boston or New York or other places that don't like guns very much, and you can have as many guns as you want, which would basically end Maryland, for example, just had a very strict gun control law. Thank you, Governor O'Malley. It would basically end Maryland's gun control law because it would mean that the state with the least amount of protection would be nationwide. Now, conservatives used to rail against the federalization and say that they believe in states' rights.
Well, they believe in states' rights ever since the Revolution because it's states' rights that allows you to have slaves. And, the NRA is still in favor of that. Right. I think that's one of their official policy statements.
But the NRA is against states' rights when it comes to states actually making gun control unlawful. So that's what's going on. The point is we have to stay vigilant. They still need 60 votes for every damn amendment and on a final passage of the bill. And if this killer amendment passes, the one that says you can basically carry your guns from one state to the other with no restrictions, then the liberals are not going to vote for the bill, and they shouldn't because it is a killer amendment, and the whole bill will die. So I just hope that Nicole Hockey and other brave parents of Newtown will be willing to undergo the heartache of continuing the fight. Hockley said, this is one of the last things she said. She said to Dana Milbank that she was tired and eager to return to her husband and surviving son. She had postponed the interview to take the president's call. But Hockley, a stay-at-home mom with a background in marketing, wasn't impressed by that or by all the lawmakers' attention. Quote, "This has been quite a whirlwind, but honestly, I would rather be at home with Dylan." Her son who died, who was murdered just a few weeks ago.
It's painful, and it truly is painful because what gets lost in all of this insanity are the people and are the victims. The NRA is always screaming, guns don't kill people, people kill people. Well, the point is they don't care about people.
Right.
They care about guns. Right. And that's a huge, huge difference. And the other thing that bothers me, Mark, even though I have some hopes for some kind of bill, is, and it sort of ties in with my topic we'll get to a little bit later, but we don't know what goes on most of the time in the government, simply because this gun bill, of course, will draw publicity and there'll be a vote on it and we'll know parts of it. What we won't know are the secret amendments, the anonymously placed amendments that are attached to other bills that subvert anything that we see on the surface. And it's this kind of tactic that is really keeping our entire nation ignorant. And I'll get into more examples later. But even if we get our hopes up, some clown will attach some amendment to a bill about, corn chips or potato chips or whatever, and we'll never know about it, and it will be anonymous, and it'll be passed with the potato chip bill, and that bill will say anybody can have a gun anytime they want without any kind of check whatsoever, period.
Well, famously, Monsanto added what they call the Monsanto Amendment. They still don't know, by the way, who wrote it, whatever senator stuck it in the bill.
Well, Monsanto wrote it.
Well, we know Monsanto wrote it, but we don't know is which member of Congress snuck it into the bill about genetically modified foods, which is interesting. And Gar and I had a whole discussion recently about about Rand Paul's speech at Howard University, which is fascinating in all of just the ignorance of Rand Paul about African Americans. And he was kind of trying to put one over on them. He's like, hey, you know, Lincoln was a Republican, and he expected they didn't know that. Not only did they knew that, but they recited back to him things that he couldn't remember the name of Edward Brooks, Massachusetts Republican black senator back when the Republican Party did have liberals in it. And, of course, he did this wonderful story of the Republican Party from 1860 all the way till 1960, and then skipped past 50 years. And then today, John Stewart famously said, the history of the Republican Party, Lincoln and Roosevelt and yada, yada, yada. Yeah. And today, because, you know, obviously, and the students very smartly pointed out the 50-year gap in his legacy. Cool. But he did not know about the Monsanto bill, which is actually where I was going with this.
No,
he didn't. He said he had no idea about it. An intelligent student asked him about it, and he's like, well, he'll have to look that up and get back to them. So,
You don't think he was just dodging? I think he
think he hadn't heard about it. I don't know.
He hadn't heard about it. It's like this former press secretary for Obama saying he didn't know anything about, you know, drones.
No. You know, I honestly think, Terry, that we live in two different universes in America today. Unfortunately, there's a red universe and a blue universe. And in the blue universe, all of us have heard about the Monsanto bill because, you know, we look at Think Progress, we listen to liberal talk radio, we watch MSNBC, and they talk about these things. Mm-hmm. Fox hasn't mentioned it. So why would Rand Paul see it? Rush Limbaugh hasn't mentioned it. He lives in a different world from the world in which we inhabit. So what we know is the Monsanto bill, he's like, well, is this a voice vote? And it was. Was this attached to the appropriations? I don't know. I believed him when he said he heard of it. I didn't believe him when he said that he never opposed the Civil Rights Act, given that he opposed it just 2 years ago.
and he didn't know what was in there on the appropriations bill. Yeah, I'm sorry. I don't buy it.
That's a big bill.
Not that I should start trusting him. I'm not going to.
Let me raise one more issue with you, Terry, because in terms of Washington's function, this is getting no press, and it concerns me. And that has to do with the Republicans shutting down the government, not in the obvious ways, but in the unobvious ways. And that is by preventing institutions like the National Labor Relations Board from working, in preventing the courts from working. They're basically filibustering all of Obama's nominees. And they're doing it even when the nominees get a unanimous approval from the Senate Judiciary Committee. So I want you to think about this. There's some 15 senators on the Senate Judiciary Committee. I think there's 17, 9 Democrats and 8 Republicans. Mm-hmm. So the 9 Democrats agree. The 8 Republicans agree. So those 8 Republicans who say this candidate's fine, they're not some wacko liberal, we can deal with them, they're a moderate, join that with the 55 Democrats in the Senate. That's 63. That's enough to have to avert a filibuster. What Republicans are doing is they're saying that even though we're okay with these nominees, we can't allow them on the courts because the courts are currently skewed in conservative ways. The D.C. Circuit Court of Appeal, for example, is 4-3 conservative to liberal. And there's about 3 or 4 open seats. Now, if Obama could appoint judges the way every other president could appoint judges, then they would have a majority Democrats on the court. And Republicans are saying, even though we're fine with these nominees, we're still not going to allow them to go on the court. And in the case of the National Labor Relations Board, it's even worse. The United States Supreme Court has said, for reasons that completely they astound me, that there's 5 members of the board. If they don't have 3 members on it, the board can't function. There are only 2 members on the board, and the Republicans have refused to allow any other new people be appointed because they say, we don't like the law. We don't like a law that allows unions to exist. We don't like a law that allows workers to fight back against employers because that makes employers earn less, and they're the ones who buy us in Congress. So we can't defeat the law because we don't have enough votes to get past a presidential veto to end unions forever, which is what we want to do. Instead, we're going to take the branch of government that enforces workers' rights, and we're going to make sure it cannot work. And Obama recently did recess appointments, and then the D.C. Court of Appeals, the one that he can't change because they're filibustering him there, said, nope, those recess appointments are no good. Basically, you cannot enforce the law. That even though you're required by the Constitution to enforce the law, Mr. President, you cannot enforce the law when Congress refuses to let you enforce the law. And nobody's talking about this.
That's the key thing, Mark. That's the key thing. We are living in, you know, an age that where ignorance is run is an industry. It truly is an industry. What is going on in our society, except for, you know, very few sources, and you've mentioned many of them, you know, the people do not know. The ideologues are destroying the country one little tiny step at a time. They do it under the table. They do it by going around whatever legislation they can, by, you know, the tactics that you've given out already, by attaching amendments people don't know about. And the American public is kept in this ignorance, and it's kept in ignorance on other issues, which I do want to get to at some point. But, you know, it's frightening, because I've been doing a lot of study, and I know you don't like this comparison, but I've been doing a lot of study about the rise of the Nazi Party recently in Germany back then. And, of course, everybody says it's all Hitler's fault, and they want to blame Hitler, and obviously he had a whole lot to do with starting it.
I blame German people. Listen,
yes,
the majority allowed him to take power.
That's the point.
There's always going to be evil, crazy people around.
Yeah.
The question is whether it's like blaming the shooters in Colorado and Tucson. And I just say, no, they're mentally ill, deranged human beings. There are always going to be them in every society. I blame the people who allow the deranged to get the guns.
Blaming
a deranged person is kind of like, I don't know, blaming your dog for eating a bone. I mean, they're just that's ingrained in them.
That's exactly the point. The ambassador of Germany back in the 1930s actually wrote to the United States. I'm sorry, it was one of the consuls in Germany. It wasn't the ambassador. Wrote to the State Department saying, the people are pushing Hitler. The people are demanding these kind of strict and violent subjugation of the Jews, etc. The Hitler regime actually retreated a little bit from some of the violence, this is before the war, and asked people to just sort of calm down and everything else and stop turning in your neighbor every other day. And,
I'm not sure about that part. You'll have to show me that part.
I will send it to you if you want. I'm interested
about that, but the people had
been so led in ignorance and misled by ideologues, just like is happening in the United States, that they actually pushed the politicians to get more and more extreme.
Before I segue into your topic, which I promise I will do, I just want to mention one more thing about these filibusters. When I worked in Congress, when I worked in the House of Representatives, this was back in 2003, the Democrats filibustered some, not all, but a few extreme Republican judges. I mean the ones that said racist comments, the ones that found the Civil Rights Act did not exist, the ones that were particularly horrible to women's rights. I mean extreme judges, really extreme people. And what they did is they allowed George Bush to appoint, you know, 90% of his judges, but they picked 7 or 8 really extreme human beings, people like Robert Bork, for example, and they said, we're going to filibuster them. And the Republicans got so upset by them filibustering 5 or 10% of Bush judges, that I remember they brought cots in and they did an all-night filibuster and they really said, let our judges be. Now the Republicans are not filibustering extreme liberal judges. They're filibustering moderate judges. They're filibustering judges that the same people who voted for these judges on Judiciary Committee because they couldn't find anything wrong with them are then refusing to allow them to have a vote on the floor. Because I just pointed out, you add the 8 Republicans on Judiciary Committee to the 55 Democrats, that's over 60 right there. So they're being actively hypocritical and saying, yes, this judge is qualified. Yes, this judge can sit on the bench. I had a problem with this judge, but I will not allow the judge to sit on the bench.
Because they are afraid.
And they are afraid
that they will not get reelected because the Tea Party will jump all over them. Mm-hmm. And so therefore they will do what the evil Republicans
I think it's because they just don't want to play fair.
No, of course not.
I mean, again, look at the National Labor Relations Board. If they hate unions and they want to abolish them, they should have the decency to put forward a law to abolish unions. But
Why would you do that when you can do it so much more easily?
So my point is this. The Republicans made such a big deal over Democrats filibustering. Really, it was less than 10 Bush judges. Now the Republicans are filibustering 100 or so Obama appointees. And I know he's trying to get the gun bill done, and he's trying to get the immigration bill done, he's trying to get the budget deficit bill done. But I would hope, come summer, that Obama could do a tour and say, our courts need to function. And let's start playing back hardball with hardball. I think Harry Reid, the Democrat, should say this. I'll tell you what I would say if I were a senator. Because they're filibustering all of Obama's judges, All right. I, as a senator, promise I will never, ever, ever allow a vote on any judge when a Republican's president for this same time period. It's been 2 years. Sorry, the first 2 years of the next Republican president gets no judges from me.
And the only problem
and
with that
is
that
just fight fire with fire until the whole system falls of its own collapse.
Well, okay, there you have it. That's what's going to happen.
Well, but it cannot be the right that a Republican president gets to appoint judges and a Democratic president doesn't. It cannot
be that. If we fight that fire with that fire, we just increase the ideologues on both sides, you know.
Well,
we're stuck.
I want to hear what your answer is. I'll tell you what. Think about it, Terry. We're going to take a quick break, and then we'll get back to see if you have an answer on that and maybe even over ignorance. Maybe an answer there too. Folks, if you want to call in, it's 202-889-9797. 202-889-9797. We'll be right back with more of the Raucous Caucus right after this. Welcome back to the Raucous Caucus. This is Mark Levine, and I've got on the line
Terry D. Kester.
And Garland Nixon will be joining us in just a few moments. Now, Terry, you were saying something about Americans being ignorant. I don't know
yes,
what you're talking about. Why? I think 20% of them could place France on a map.
I'm sure they could. You 15%? Know, if they were given a little bit of a help.
Well, maybe
yeah.
so. They'd have to be told where Europe is first.
Yeah, no, Americans are surfing in ignorance. I mean, they really are. I mean, and in my opinion, the end of this fragile country is going to happen because of the institutionalized ignorance industry. Hello, Fox. But it's not just Fox, it's politician at every level. For one thing, everything is caught in the immediate, the current event, whatever it is. And unless it's 9/11, the immediate is usually kind of irrelevant. There's always much more to the story than we ever talk about or hear about, except on the Raucous Caucus. You know, it's actually, I believe that ignorance is America's biggest industry. I mean, all you have to do is watch a little bit of commercial television, commercials, TV shows, surf the garbage on TV, or watch the news. 90% of it is touching the surface of issues and never telling you what's really going on.
Wait. Reality shows are not real, Terry?
I'm talking about news shows aren't real.
That's like telling me that wrestling isn't real. Please, don't.
No. News shows are not real. They don't tell you the whole story. They don't give you the perspective. As Greg Palast calls, you know, National Public Radio, National Petroleum Radio. You know, I think there's a lot of truth in that. One of the things we've talked about, you know, is obviously what's happening with the gun legislation, which is immediate, and we're facing the tax situation. But let me just give you one other example, and you probably know this, Mark. But has there ever been a peace treaty written and established with North Korea, between the United States and North Korea?
No, there never has been.
Wrong. Wrong.
What? There's an armistice agreement.
President Carter had negotiated with North Korea. North Korea wanted one thing back in President Carter's term. They wanted one thing. This is before they were nuclear, et cetera. They'd already been punished economically for decades. They wanted a peace treaty with the United States, period.
That's what they asked for.
And President Carter had a written, established peace treaty with North Korea.
It must not have been ratified then.
Well, it didn't even quite get that. Well, it sort of got that far, but good old Reagan came in, if you remember, and he announced the Axis of Evil. And he, in President Carter's words, threw the peace treaty in the wastebasket.
Well, I think the Axis of Evil was George W. Bush. Here's what I do know.
Carter Reagan's a bit before my time. Reagan literally did throw it away.
Oh, I believe that. I was going to step forward then to almost the same thing happening another 12 years later or 20 years later, I should say, because Bill Clinton, I do know this because I was involved in watching it this time, established a very fascinating safeguards. It was like a treaty. It was an agreement he did with North Korea. And the International Atomic Energy Agency had cameras in the nuclear plants where they could watch everything that North Korea did. We gave them some food aid, basically, mm-hmm. to pay them off. But they, by all accounts, they were not working on their nuclear weapons in 98, 99, 2000, after that treaty that
Bill Clinton did,
until George W. Bush came in, referred them to the Axis of Evil,
right.
Ignored them after September 11th, and
then they very clearly developed nuclear weapons during that time. That we have continually pushed North Korea. You know, you can hate communism or whatever you want to do. I want to hate such a stupid word. But, we have pushed North Korea into a corner its entire existence. You know, we were the nation that was attacking them. back then. Well, however you want to frame it.
It's hard to get too sympathetic for North Korea now. Well, I mean, they have brutal...
But you've got to understand their paranoia. For 60-some years, we have officially been at war with North Korea. We have never negotiated a peace treaty. They have asked for a peace treaty.
That's true.
So they have been pushed into this corner. I don't know if they'd accept a peace treaty now or not. I suspect they might be interested to get the United States. They view the United States as the big evil person. Well, in their context, it is the big evil person because we refuse to say we're ever going to be at peace with you.
The reason I'm just hesitating about all this is, first of all, you say they. You're really referring to the tiny half of 1% that controls that nation.
Well, no, wait a minute.
The vast majority of people are in gulags. I mean,
that's the same percentage that controls the United States. I mean, come on.
I'm not going to put us in the same camp as North Korea. I don't know.
I'm just talking about control. You can talk. I mean, military industrial complex. Let me give you another example.
Okay. I mean, I will agree with you that we pushed North Korea. I mean, I remember when North Korea was developing nukes, and I was working in Congress at the time, and I was telling people on the phone, you know, 60 days, 90 days, they're going to have a nuclear weapon, and Bush was doing nothing about it. But certainly Clinton managed with both carrots and sticks to contain North Korea.
And President Carter went way beyond anything Clinton did.
Yeah.
But is that reported? Is that spoken about?
I hadn't heard of that.
It is not. Again, you know, and I'll give you another example here. Why can't we reform the tax code? You know, now you think every politician says they want to reform the tax code. Well, they don't want to reform the tax code. President Obama doesn't even want to reform the tax code. The tax industry is one of the larger industries in United States. It is to the advantage of the tax industry to keep the tax as complex as possible. And let me give you one quick example. In its annual reports, Berkshire Hathaway, you know, with what's his name? You know, the biggest.
Warren Buffett.
Yes, Warren Buffett. Their annual report is 108 pages. That's their annual report for the whole year. Obviously, there's a lot more detail and stuff they don't report. How many pages would you think, would you guess their tax return would be, Mark?
Oh, 500, 600?
17,839 pages.
Wow!
Yeah. That takes a hell of a lot of tax accountants to work on it.
Wow.
And that's the same thing throughout the America.
17,000 pages.
17,839 pages.
That's impressive.
That's Warren Buffett himself explaining it.
Ah.
You know,
I bet TurboTax doesn't quite cover their return.
Probably not. You know, even my taxes as self-employed over the years have run 99-100 pages, which is absurd.
Yeah.
You know, but that employs people.
Yeah, mine's about 60.
It's a huge deal. There's over 2 million tax accountants working in the United States. There are trade associations, of course, for tax accountants. Tax accountants make good money. Average pay is $30 an hour. Do you think that industry wants to have the tax code simplified? No way. No way. And these are the kind of things that Americans don't even talk. President Obama hasn't even pointed out this kind of nonsense. Nobody talks about it. The industry is too big.
See, I think what Republicans do is kind of what they used to do in college basketball games when I was a kid. And they're running out the clock. What they're doing is they're going to make guns take 6 months. And then immigration will take 4 months.
Sure.
And then the budget will take 8 months. And oh, hey, we got an election in 2014.
But even the Democrats.
And so we can't get to tax reform. We can't get to filibustering.
Have you heard of a single Democrat, president or otherwise, talk about the tax industry and the power that it has, the legislative lobbyist power that it has? Nobody has mentioned.
I can't recall one, but one I do remember that the Democrats talk about, or certainly Bernie Sanders, our one socialist in the Senate, talks about.
Yeah, wonderful Bernie.
How few corporations pay taxes. I looked this up recently because tomorrow is tax day, and I was curious because Republicans are always complaining about, well, corporations, they have to pay 35%. That's the ones that pay the taxes. But it's interesting. So what would you say were the percentage of corporations that paid no tax as recently as 1986? So this is 25 years ago.
Oh, I would say it's got to be at least 20%.
Yeah, in 1980s, 25 years ago, very good. 25 years ago, 24% of corporations paid no taxes.
Right.
25 years ago, 76% of corporations paid their taxes. More than three quarters paid taxes. Now, fast forward to today. What percentage of corporations pay zero tax?
Oh, we're probably up to 30 or 40.
Oh, it's higher. Keep going.
Oh, my God.
Keep going.
It can't be higher.
Keep going. Keep going, Terry.
50, 60?
Higher.
70, 80.
69%. Almost 70. 69%. More than two-thirds of American corporations pay zero, zilch, nada, not a penny in taxes. And what this came up to mind recently because you remember the Carnival Cruise Lines?
Mm-hmm.
That wonderful cruise lines that apparently lost power to generators and they had a floating, remember, they had a little food and there was like sewage running through the... Okay, so the United States Navy, to its credit, stuck a boat tow and towed this ship in, right? So now, get this, they sent them a bill. The Navy said, "All right, Carnival Cruise Line, it costs about $1 million
for the tow."
Carnival refuses to pay back the Navy. They're saying that nope, there's an international obligation to help people in distress. So we screwed up. Our people were in distress. You helped us. Thank you. You're going to get a nice thank you note, but we're not going to reimburse you. Guess how much Carnival Cruise Line paid in taxes this year?
Zero.
That's correct. They're one of the great 69%.
Well, at least we know that much. We don't know about the tax industry. And, without knowing about it, without confronting that, and without our politicians talking about it and our news organizations talking about it, people don't have any idea what's going on. They didn't know it was a peace treaty with North Korea. They don't know how big the tax industry. You probably know this because this was a thing that was attached to another financial bill. I think you know this one. I think we've talked about it. That the CDC, we've got an epidemic of gun death and gun shooting and gun everything else in this country, right?
Sure, right.
This is the U.S. of A. The U stands for shoot anybody, anywhere, anytime you want. It's the U.S. of A, of A, of A.
You shoot anybody. U.S.
Shoot anybody. Yeah.
You shoot anybody.
You shoot anybody.
All right.
But, there's an epidemic of this. Now, should the CDC investigate if it's an epidemic, which it certainly is? Yes, yeah. The CDC should investigate. Can it investigate? No.
It used to.
Yeah, it
they
used
actually
to a long
before.
Time ago.
No, that's true. In fact, it's funny because I often mention the statistic that 40% of guns are sold privately. They're sold without background checks. They're sold outside of gun shows. And then I've heard conservatives complain that figure, Mark, is an old figure. It's from the late 1980s. And that's true. It is from the late 1980s.
Because they haven't been able to do any studies since.
Exactly. Because they've prohibited studies since then. I suspect it's a lot higher now because since they did background checks, more people are avoiding the licensed gun dealers. So, if you're a criminal and you want to have a weapon, that's how you're going to get them.
Yeah. And the CD, and people don't know about that the studies are actually literally prohibited.
That's true.
Although
President Obama, to his credit, did sign an executive order to get around that prohibition and to do studies again. I don't think it's the CDC, but I do know that one of his 26 or something executive orders on guns includes doing a new study under some other presidential provision. So he is...
Okay, just in line with that and with your concern about industry, did you know that 56% of the total tax subsidies go to just four industries?
Let me guess. Hold on. Agriculture, oil. I'm right about those two.
And oil, you're right about.
Not agriculture?
No.
Oh, wow. Oil, guns?
No.
Let
me tell you.
Hmm.
Number one subsidy goes to the financial industry.
Oh, of course.
And
pharmaceutical industry would be one of them too, right?
That includes tax accountants, of course.
All right, so financial.
Then it goes to utilities, gas, and electrics. Then it goes to telecommunications. Then it goes to oil and gas and pipeline.
Pharmaceutical isn't in the top four?
Oh, no, it's down there a little ways. In terms of subsidies, it's number 10 is all they get.
We subsidize?
Pharmaceuticals and medical practices pay about a tax rate of about 21%.
Wait, we still subsidize the telecommunications industry?
Yes.
You mean,
yes, they pay that.
Have you seen your cable bill lately?
We subsidize them
in addition to how much they're charging us?
They pay an effective tax rate of 8.2%. AT&T, et cetera, et cetera. 8.2% is their effective tax rate.
You know what the effective tax rate means, by the way, because I looked this up. It's very interesting. Given that 70% of corporations are paying zero tax, the others pretty much pay the 35%. So what you have is a case where if the effective tax rate is 8%, that means three quarters are paying no taxes and one quarter are paying the full 35%. And the best way for a corporation to avoid taxes is to park the money abroad. That's how they do
yes.
it. And it's not just the Cayman Islands and all those fancy places that Mitt Romney parked his money.
Yeah.
But China, India, France, England, name it.
Mongolia, it doesn't make any difference.
Right, and where they can get cheap labor. But it's interesting, now the Republicans are saying, well, if we just say you don't ever have to pay taxes on that income, I'm sure they'll bring it home. And while that's true, I look in the other direction. I say, well, what if we tax them on it, whether it's here or there, anyway? And then it doesn't matter that they might as well bring it home because it's the same tax rate.
Let me give you a wonderful, classic, tragic example of that right here in Oregon. Now, you've heard of the company Nike, right?
I have heard of Nike.
Yes, and you see
just
their
do
little
it. Just do it.
And all through March Madness and all that.
Go ahead. Just do it. Just attack Nike. Just do it.
Yeah. Just attack Nike. They have persuaded the Oregon government, and the Oregon government literally agreed to this within 2 days. 2 days they agreed to this, that they will pay taxes. Only they're going to do some expansion here, supposedly, maybe 500 jobs. So if you do 500 jobs, you can get anything you want. They are going to pay taxes on products only sold in Oregon. Out of Nike,
what?
Of all this industry all around the world, selling all around the country, making enormous profits. Their headquarters are here in Oregon. They will only pay taxes on goods that have been sold here. Not only that.
Wait. Only pay Oregon taxes.
Yes, pay Oregon taxes, yes.
Okay, all right, yes, because yes. They still have to pay the federal taxes.
Right. All right, okay. Well, they'll get around to that. Not only that, they have gotten in their agreement that there will be no changes in any tax laws that will ever affect them for the next 30 and or 40 years, depending on
the year. That. Constitutionally, you can't bind future legislatures to
constitutionally,
say...
Constitutionally, who gives a damn?
I mean, you cannot say, if there's a change in government, our laws will hold forever. No, if there's a change in the legislature...
Got it in writing. They've got it. They can change it for everybody else in the whole state.
I don't think that's enforceable.
But they can't change it for Nike. You know, and now, of course, every other industry you can think of, including Intel, also headquartered here, you know, is jumping on the bandwagon. Oh, we can get a little bill passed through that we won't get any changes in our taxes for the next 30 or 40 years.
It's interesting as a lawyer, because as a matter of contract law, maybe they could say if the laws change that they have to be reimbursed. But I just don't think that's enforceable. That would be like that'd be like the Democrats are saying, all right. We are going to, back when we had 60 votes in the Senate for all of 6 weeks, we are going to prohibit any changes to the law that allow a Republican to be nominated for anything for the next 50 years.
Oh, can we do that? Oh, please, can we do that?
I don't know why not. Nike can do it. Just do it. Just do it. Swoosh. Just do it.
There's hope.
That's the most I'm ever going to cite.
Let me give you one more example of ignorance. And again, this is something you made. You know about the oil spill in
Arkansas.
The pipeline break in Arkansas?
Oh, yes. Have you seen the pictures?
Oh, yeah.
Because they're prohibited, you know.
Yeah. Well, that's my point. Did you know about the FAA no-fly zone?
Yes, I did know about that. But tell us.
Well, do the Americans know about that?
I don't know.
Fox News reporting that?
I saw it on CNN,
yeah.
I think, or MSNBC.
Yep.
Oh,
probably.
No, maybe it was John Stewart. Anyway,
John Stewart did bring it up, yes.
Yeah,
but there is, they have actually, ExxonMobil has gotten the power over our government. They control the government. Let's be honest about this. They've gotten the power to say, one, if it can cordon off the whole area, there can be no photographers, no press is allowed into the area. Not only that, they got the FAA to establish a no-fly zone over the ruined area where the oil is seeping into the ground and destroying the ground, the crops and everything else in people's homes. A no-fly zone over it, so that nobody can fly over to even look at it.
Well, what they're doing is they're keeping environmentalists out, and because they don't want them to document the sludge.
Of course not.
One environmentalist had the audacity to get in there.
He snuck in.
That's right, and they got pictures. This is great. One of the things that Exxon is doing is they're sweeping the sludge down the storm drains.
Mm-hmm.
You see. Literally, and I'm sure that does nothing to clog or harm our sewage lines.
No, of course not.
Which, of course, taxpayers have to pay for.
Yeah.
And, of course, they went after him. How dare he trespass?
Did you see the picture of how they're soaking up the oil?
Yes, Bounty paper towels, I believe, quilted.
I'm sorry, what?
Paper towels.
Yeah, paper towels.
Right.
That's the science that ExxonMobil is using.
Well, they're quilted, though, Terry. They're the best kind.
Yeah, right.
So don't tell me they're not doing enough.
Paper towels. I mean, I wish I had stock in the paper towel industry just because of the oil companies going to be spilling everything all over the place.
Well,
and now their only solution is paper towels.
And where do they throw it away after it's soaked?
Oh, probably up in
the landfill.
landfill, or they, you know, they send it to Utah, you know, or yeah, Utah. Utah would accept it because they love the oil
industry. So, Terry, what are we going to do about this? I mean, no, I'm serious. We got environmental disaster. We have corporations not paying taxes. We've got the NRA insisting that every crazy person. By the way, one of the things they want to do in this gun bill I haven't even mentioned yet is they want to make it easier, catch this, easier for the insane to own guns. See, already the rule is now that if you've been declared violently insane, you can't own a gun. You can get one through gun shows, but you can't sort of legally own one. The NRA wants it to be clear that if you haven't been violently insane in a while, you can get your gun.
Even you and I classify for that.
Even you.
Even me.
Even you after the 60s. So, you know, they think gun laws are too strict. And we all know that the violent insane need to have more guns and you know, Americans. And if you want violent, insane people to have guns, vote Republican. Give money to the NRA because who knows? Maybe you just want to off some loved ones.
You know, that argument is so bogus. And again, not President Obama. Nobody is pointing out that argument is pure crap because what is the murders that are created in this country are not by the insane. Nobody in a gang, the average gang member who's shooting somebody is not going to get declared insane. The husband that's shooting the wife, the neighbor that's shooting the neighbor, the son-in-law that's shooting the mother-in-law, none of these people are going to get declared insane, except maybe after the fact, but they are actually what we call relatively normal people, and they are the ones doing 99.9% of all the murders in the country, the average human being.
Sure, and listen, I'm all about banning guns to the violently insane. I can't, but my point is how far they're willing to go to actually protect the used to be insane, but are no longer insane.
Well,
rights.
You know, you've got to think of this on a personal level, Mark. I mean, what's his name, the president of the NRA? I mean, the man is
Wayne
obviously
LaPierre.
Yeah, he's obviously insane. You know, and he wants to be able to buy a gun within a year or two when there's no bill passed and he's back to being sane.
Well, I'll give you an example, though, in terms of regular people. You're talking about someone who catches their spouse in bed with someone else or just hates their boss or
whatever, yeah.
Decides to kill at the spur of the moment. Virginia had a law that lasted for, I don't know, 10, 15, 20 years.
Oh, I got to talk about Virginia
now.
Real quick, too.
No, but Virginia, which after all, Virginia guns are found in every New England state. I mean, Virginia is the gun. It's the closest place to the liberal Northeast where you can get a gun easily. But even Virginia, relatively conservative on gun culture, Virginia had a law that said you could only buy one gun a month. One gun a month. So you can still get 12 in a year. You can still get, you know, 120 over a decade, but only one gun per month. And there are even exceptions for gun collectors, those few people who might reasonably want more than one gun in a month.
Or need a tank.
Right. Well, what that does is it prohibits a lot of the people like the crazy, the Connecticut shooter or the Colorado shooter or the Arizona shooter or the California shooter, it goes on forever. It prevents people from going in and buying five AK-47s and going on a rampage. They can only buy one AK-47 and go on a rampage. They have to wait another month, and if they're that determined to kill people, they're not usually willing to wait a month.
Because of gun shows and no real control on registration,
right.
You can have your neighbor go in and buy you another gun.
That's true.
Your Aunt Louise go in and buy you another gun.
That's true.
And you can just keep on doing that till you get your 45 guns.
But don't worry, because Virginia's Republican legislature has just ended the one gun a month restriction. So
yeah. Did you hear? Oh, they've ended that?
Oh, yeah.
That's the nice bottom line to my story. Did you hear the latest with Cuccinelli?
Oh, my God.
If Cuccinelli gets to be governor of Virginia, I mean, we've got to get rid of Virginia and Texas. Sorry, Mark, you're going to have to move.
He's not going to win.
New bit?
He's not. Yes, I know he wants to reinforce sodomy laws.
Yes. Yes. He wants to make
married. He wants to make oral sex between married couples illegal.
I want to know, how does he know about oral sex?
You know what? Someone needs to ask him.
Yeah.
Ken Cuccinelli, have you ever committed sodomy?
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, it's a fair question. If he wants to make it illegal for married couples,
and he's married, right?
We want to know if he's ever had oral sex with his wife, and he needs to answer under oath, under penalty of perjury.
And so does she.
Absolutely, she does too. Yeah. And if they have, we've got to put him in jail.
And I can tell you this, if I were in any way related to Cuccinelli, no matter what sex he was, I wouldn't get near the man.
Cuccinelli? Is that what his policies would be like? If we lived under Cuccinelli, we'd all have Cuccinelli-ty?
I think so.
I don't know. That's a pretty scary thing. Please, don't give Virginia Cuccinelli-ty.
Right.
Sounds like an awful disease.
It is, but it can't be sexually transmitted because he's outlawed sex.
Right.
So, you know.
Maybe it's Cuccinellosis.
Cuccinellosis. It could be both. Frightening.
All right, let me take one more break, give people a chance to call in if they want to join the discussion, and maybe even try to reach Garland. Who knows where he is?
What does he know?
202-889-9797 if you want to call in. 202-889-9797. And Terry and I will be back with more of the Raucous Caucus right after this. Welcome back to the Raucous Caucus. Got about 6 minutes left. We have tried to reach Garland, and he is a no-show. We expect him to show up next week with a tardy slip explaining exactly why he didn't come on air today.
I hope he's not unreachable.
Unreachable? You mean as a person, as a student, as a human being,
as the president of NRA, as the president? I was almost going to say President Cuccinelli. Oh my God!
Please.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah, you have to do penance.
Yes, I do. I'm going to be on my knees for a long time, I'm telling you.
Listen, I'll tell you, coming up in just 5 minutes, and I'm going to introduce the topic, Terry, and ask you what you think about it.
Okay.
I'm devoting a full 2 hours on the 50th anniversary of a Supreme Court decision that many Americans have never heard of. Everyone knows Brown versus Board of Education. How many Americans know the decision Gideon v. Wainwright? You ever heard of that?
Only by name, but I couldn't
tell
you.
Gideon v. Wainwright, 50 years ago, this month in 1963, is what established that Americans who are too poor to afford counsel and are being tried with a crime will have one provided to them by the state. The Sixth Amendment to the Constitution says that you have a right to counsel in your defense, but until 1963, it wasn't clear what you would do if you were too poor to afford a lawyer. And this decision, which has been watered down a bit, and frankly, we're going to talk and spend 2 hours talking about how hard it still is for indigent criminal defendants to get decent counsel. They get a lawyer, but it can often be a very hard, overworked public defender who's terrible. But at least the idea that even if you're too poor, you still get a chance at having a fair trial. Still not that. It is 50 years old today, and we're going to celebrate that and then talk about how far we have yet to go. But to me, Terry, this reminds me of how hard it is in America for people of limited means to get any basic rights. I mean, we know they don't get health care. We know they don't get justice. And a lot of times they don't even get the right to vote.
Well, people really do need to understand, and I don't know why I do know why, because, again, the ignorance is the industry here. You know, people do not understand the society that they live in. We are practically in a feudal society. The elite of today are so far above the elite of any century you can pick, except maybe, you know, Rome, that's ever existed, and it's that they control what is happening. Even if you've got that wonderful law that you are entitled to an attorney, something like 80 or higher percent of those in jail today are there through a plea bargain. They do not get a trial.
It's higher than 90%, Terry.
Pardon?
It's higher than 90%.
For the plea bargain?
Yes.
It's worse than I thought.
Yep.
You know, and you think it all the way through, what is happening? Most of those, as you know, 80% of those same people, you know, it's drug-related. Why is it drug-related? Well, because drugs are sold illegal. Why are drugs illegal? Because it's a huge money-making operation. And no matter what happens, you know, with all that money you get by selling drugs and the cartels and everything else, you're not keeping that money in your mattress. You are investing that money. You are using that money. You are putting it in banks that will keep it relatively secret. You know, it's, again, a money reason that the average person, if I go out and buy illegally, you know, some marijuana in Virginia or someplace else, I can get sent to jail. If I buy it 3 times, it's an automatic sentence. A judge isn't even involved. The only defense I have is the plea bargain. And usually that plea bargain means I got to accuse you, Mark.
Yeah, that's true. You have to blame someone else. In fact, just recently, there was a 60 Minutes piece on the Central Park, I think they called them Five.
I lived in Manhattan when that happened.
Yeah, there was an awful rape in Central Park in the 80s, I think it was.
Yep, I was
and,
there.
They found five black men, boys really at the time.
Yeah, 14 to 16, 18.
Who were in Central Park or nearby. They accused them all. They've all been in jail from the 80s until 2002, when it was found out, oh, guess what? None of them were involved in the rape. The guy who did do the rape was already in jail, although not before he raped and murdered several other women. But they found these five black kids around, and they just accused them. And this actually comes to what's going to be my next segment, which is on Gideon V. Wainwright, because they had terrible counsel. Yeah. They were locked up in a room. They were told to blame each other, or they go to jail for the rest of their life.
They were individually interrogated for over 30 hours.
That's correct, without an attorney present,
yep,
until finally one blamed one, and then one blamed, yep, the other, and they, mm-hmm, they broke down. And, of course, all of them were completely innocent. And to this day, and to New York City's everlasting shame, they have not compensated the five innocent people sent to jail during, I mean, their formative years from, say, age 14 to 34.
Not only have they not reimbursed him, Mark, they are still have not been cleared of the crime. They've been released. I forget the legal terminology.
Right.
They have been released, but the state still maintains that, oh, well, they're still guilty.
Even though we have DNA proving, yeah, conclusively that they're not. So that's actually a good segue into my next segment, which is how hard it still is for people accused of a crime who can't afford a lawyer to get a decent defense. But
thank heavens it's been 20 or 30 years since I committed any crimes, and those were just crimes against the state.
Well, Terry, you have the right to remain silent about that, and I'm going to ask you to remain silent right now,
no,
because the Raucous Caucus is ending. Thank you
no.
so much for coming on the show. I appreciate it. We'll be back next week at noon for another edition of the Raucous Caucus. Coming
thank
up.
Thank you, Mark.
Thank you, Terry. Coming up, the Inside Scoop. We're going to talk about Gideon V. Wainwright. More importantly, if you're a criminal defendant, how you can get counsel in this day and age. Coming up, big show, 2 hours. We'll be right back with the Inside Scoop right after this.